This program is a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and is brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guests, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.
97 Gold presents Your Money with Fay Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Now, here's Fay Bagby on 97 Gold.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
I'm wonderful, as usual.
Excellent, excellent. Every Saturday morning is wonderful. I don't think I've ever heard you on a Saturday morning say, it's not so great, but it's fine.
That would be against my nature.
I know.
You know, it just wouldn't be my nature. Oh, man.
That would be so weird.
I'm always happy on Saturday.
I'd fall out of my chair.
That's right. You would fall out of your chair. And then we'd be trying to get you back up.
I know.
Have you thought about the weather this week?
I didn't until it got sweltering hot. What was it? Was it Thursday, I think, that it got really hot? And then
107.
Yeah, that's too much. That's when I started thinking about the
weather.
That was
a little hot, wasn't it?
Yeah. I think maybe Alaska sounds lovely this time of year.
It does. And Colorado's sounding better, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Either one would work about right now.
The North Pole is lovely this time of year.
I can just see us going to the North Pole, you know, all wrapped up like a mummy.
Yeah, that's not going to last for very long. I don't think I would make a very good Eskimo.
No, I wouldn't either. I don't know how they make it.
I don't either. It's just too cold. You have to bundle up even to go into the kitchen. And so that's just too much.
That'd be a little tough, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And here, if we just have the heat go off for an hour, we're just in, you know, bad trouble in the winter.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we just can't take it.
Yeah, goodness gracious. So,
yeah, I think we're
where we need to be right now, I believe.
I think so. I mean, it sounds a little bad, 107, but we'll get over it.
we'll get over it. Eventually, it'll cool down summertime around Thanksgiving-ish.
That's right. Yeah, that's one thing about that time of year. When you see the pumpkins and you see all this other, you knew it's getting cooler.
Well, now, if you're anxious to see pumpkins, we're less than 3 months away from Halloween.
I know. You're thinking about it already because you've already mentioned it. Oh, my God.
I'm already looking forward to pumpkins and cooler weather and Halloween candy.
I knew the candy was going to come up. Yeah. I knew you were ready. Oh, my gosh. You and all the little children.
I know. Sometimes some folks say I am little children. So.
Well, that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
This is Your Money with Fay Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
You know, I don't know of anybody in average day-to-day life that has ever said, hey, let's talk about retirement. It generally is not fun for most people, and that's why you have to make this such a big deal, because people need to think about retirement. They need to talk about retirement. They need to plan for retirement. They can't get within a couple of years of retirement and say, hey, I don't know if I'm ready or not. I want to retire in 6 months. Haven't done anything. Hadn't thought about it. Don't know if I have the resources. Don't know if I can retire. Don't know anything. And then all of a sudden, they think they're going to retire. So,
well, that's right. But, you know, I know they do talk to each other about retirement. And you and I said, well, lots of times they don't. But the reason I know that is these men that come in to see me say, well, I was talking to old Joe Friday over here,
uh-huh,
or whoever it was. And he told me about, you know, about your investments. So
yeah.
I know men talk when they're out together.
Yeah.
And apparently it does come up and they do say, well, that's what I made.
And it's
or I'm making money or whatever it is.
That's a special kind of person, because I know that those people who have been making money, they love to share the stories. And then they're doing it by investing in these life settlements. And so basically what these are is their life insurance policies that people need to sell for a number of reasons, you know, whether it's to settle their estate. If they've been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, they know they're not going to make make it. They know that, you know, they don't want to fight it because we hear all the time about the treatments being so difficult. Some people just choose not to. They've maybe done everything they want to do. They want to get their estate settled. Or the other main reason, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think probably the reason that people diagnosed with stage four cancer want to sell their policy is because they need a quick lump sum of money to take in all the therapy and the you know the things that need to be done to fight it.
That's what they always tell me, is I need the cash. You know, I need the money. And that's the only big way to raise a lot of money at one time is through a life insurance policy. And thank goodness they have life insurance. Almost everybody in America does. And if you get cancer, that's one of your good assets. You can sell it and get enough money for all the treatment that you need.
Mm-hmm. So for people who have done this for a while, they know how the process works. For those who have never invested in a life insurance policy, probably the number one question they're asking right now is, how in the world do you take a life insurance policy and turn that into investment to make people a bunch of money? How does that work?
Well, it's like this. If you come to us, you've got stage four cancer, and you say, I need to sell this policy. We say, how much is the policy? Let's say they said $300,000. Then we tell them what we can afford to give them for it, and we pay them in a lump sum, and they can go get medical treatment, and then we make the difference between what we paid them and what the face amount is. That's how our clients make their money.
So the profit window comes from the amount you paid and the full value of the policy. And the thing to point out here is that the policy, whatever you pay for it, does not affect the value of the policy itself. So if you pay, and I'm just making up some numbers here, if you pay, say, 70% of a policy, if you pay the policyholder that percentage of it, what actually gets paid out when the policy matures is the full value, not the reduced.
That's right. The face amount of the policy is what is paid out, not what we gave them, which is a lot lower, but the face amount, and that's how our people get paid, and that's how they make their profit.
So then the second question might be, well, you know, how do I know this is a good investment? What makes this so much better than Wall Street? And I know there's a number of reasons, but for somebody who's been in the stock market, we know the environment. We know the nervousness that people have. We know the anxiety. We know how, you know, profits can go away in a heartbeat. We saw, you know, the what was it, a 600-point swing at one point earlier this week. You know, it went from a 300-point up to a 300-point down for a total of 600-point spread. We know that things like that can happen, and even worse, like 2008, can happen literally overnight. So what would you say to somebody is probably the top one or two reasons that make this such a more, conducive investment?
Well, what I like about it is you know what you're going to make. You know, and in the stock market, you don't know. But when you do this, you know what you're going to make. It's according to your contract. You know, if it's a 24-month policy, you'll make 24%. If it's an 18-month, you know you'll make 18%. So you know in advance what you're going to make. That's the best part about it. You don't have to speculate. It takes that part of it out. So that way you know what you're going to make and you know how it's going to come out. And you don't have the risk of what am I going to make? You know, am I going to make $5 or am I going to make $1,000? So I like that part. It's in your contract.
So I'm going to play devil's advocate here. I know the answer, and I'm pretty sure I know what you're going to say, but for those who this whole concept is new to, let me ask the obvious question and play the devil's advocate. How do people know what they're going to make? Because especially if they're in the stock market, nobody has any idea from minute to minute what they're going to make. So how do we know with the life settlement?
Okay. We give them a contract, and the contract says, this is the face amount of the contract, this is what kind of cancer they've got. This is the insurance company. This is what your profit is. And it's right there. It used to be page 14, but it's five pages from the end. And it tells them everything they need to know. And it tells them what percentage they're going to make. It tells them if it goes over what they'll make. It tells them what their liability is. So they know all that going in. And they know what they're going to make by contract.
And that does not get affected by anything else in the world. And I think that probably is another really big deal that maybe we don't point out all the time, is that unlike the stock market, if anything happens overseas, if anything happens in this country, we all know that the stock market can go up and down at the change of the wind. But with a life settlement, nothing affects this type of investment at all.
No, it doesn't matter if we're having, you know, an election. It doesn't matter, you know, if China's doing something or North Korea's doing something. It's just a life insurance policy. It doesn't go up and down. It doesn't fluctuate. In other words, whatever the insurance company insured these people for, that's what they're going to pay. They're going to pay the face amount of their policy. That's it.
So then maybe the next question for somebody who's new to the whole concept is, okay, well, this sounds really great. I like, you know, knowing what I'm going to make. I like knowing that nothing affects it. That's really cool, too. But when do I get paid?
When the person passes away. And that's in the contract also, that we believe, according to the life expectancy, they have this many months. If it's a $1 million policy, we've got two opinions. And the opinion says, okay, we believe they'll be dead in 2 years. So we know that, and that's what we go by. So then we say, okay, and we send it out to them to invest, and we say, this is a 2-year policy. And if they say it's 3 years, we're going to tell them that. So they know everything about the policy. They've got a copy of the doctor's report, and that's real important. That's how you know whether you want to do it or not.
So then the next question might be, you know, how much can I make by doing this?
Okay, it'll be right down there on the contract, and it'll say, you know, you're going to make 15%, let's say. It'll be right there in the contract.
So,
and then it'll say, if this goes over, it'll tell you that, how much your liability is.
So the 15%, say, profit in this just hypothetical example, say, okay, yeah, I'm gonna put in $100,000. I'm going to make 15% profit. And then when the policy matures, that's how much I get paid. So how is that profit percentage determined?
Well, we decided a long time ago to pay them 1% a month. So that's how it's done. It's 1% a month. If it's a 24 month, you'll get 24. If it's 15, you'll get 15%. Or if it's 12 months, you'll get 12. It's just 1% a month for the contract, whatever the length of the contract is.
And so that comes from doctors, you know.
That's right. It's all from doctors, not from Fay.
Not from Dr. Fay.
Dr. Fay has some opinions, but I do not put it in there.
Well, I don't know what any of that means. However, I have a feeling I feel a book coming on with all kinds of stories.
That's right.
So doctors look at this and say, you know, person X goes to the doctor. They're diagnosed with cancer. They obviously they get a thorough examination. Doctors look at this and say, okay, you've got stage 4 cancer. Here's where it is. We believe that you probably have maybe 2 years to live, which ends up being 24 months. And that is, and correct me if I'm wrong, but that number from the doctors, that's where that percentage comes from. It comes from these expert reports. You don't just make numbers up out of thin air.
No, we cannot make numbers up. That would not be good. We have to go by what the doctor says. If the doctor says 24, we usually go 24 with them. Now, there's been some times when I said we had two opinions. One said 27, one said 32. Or you know, and so I go in between. I'll say, okay, we'll make it 28.
All right, so you kind
because
of split
I had
the
two
difference.
Different opinions. Yeah, we had to split it. But usually, if it's under $1 million, we've got one report, and we're going to go with that. And then we're going to escrow for premiums based on if I think it's really going to come due. If I'm a little worried about the 24 months being correct, I may go out 30 months or 35. Yeah, just to be sure I've got enough escrow.
So you do have the option to kind of change things a little bit to make things more profitable for the investor.
Yes, and if I'm worried about something, I say, well, if I'm a little worried, I may want more premium escrowed. you know, just to be sure.
Yeah.
So, and, of course, if it comes due early, it doesn't make any difference. If it comes due on time, it won't make any difference. The only time it would be real important is if it goes over.
So if it comes in early, people still get the same amount of profit.
That's right.
It's just they get it quicker.
They get it quicker and can reimburse it a little quicker. You know, they can reinvest just a little quicker.
Now, what would happen if you had two medical reports? And I don't know if this has ever happened or if it's even a possibility. I just don't know.
Okay.
So what if you got two reports in and they were, you know, maybe not within, you know, 3 or 4 months or they weren't close? What if there was a large difference between the two? What has that ever happened?
It has, and we don't buy it if it is because there's something that we've missed somewhere.
All right, so just to be safe, you'll kick that out and you won't even bid on it.
No, I'll pass on that because there's something that somebody's missed on one of the reports.
Okay.
So if it's that far apart, we're not going to buy it.
So when you get these reports and they're presented to you as, you know, hey, this is a policy that that is open for bidding, so-and-so wants to sell their policy, what kinds of things are you looking at? Because you don't bid on every single policy. There are some that you don't even bother with. You kick those out immediately and go on to other reports. So what makes some policies better than others?
Well, a lot of things. Not only whatever they've got, whatever kind of cancer it is, whether it's esophagus cancer, stomach cancer, a pancreatic, whatever. Those things are really, really important. The next thing is, has it been resected? Can it be resected? A lot of it can't. Pancreatic cancer usually cannot be operated on. So we know that one's going to come in earlier. It's going to depend if they're obese. I looked at one this last week. I swear to you, the man weighed 113 pounds.
Oh, Lord.
And they're giving him several months, and I'm going, he isn't going to make it. Why are they saying he's going to live that many months? I mean, 113 pounds is like a teenager. I mean, you can't weigh that small amount and survive cancer, I can tell you that.
So you can look at that and say, wow, this person has lost so much weight, they're in a whole lot of trouble, and so that would be, I would assume, a policy that you would go after a little bit more aggressively.
I would, and then I look at the ones that are obese. If you're obese, you don't live as well. You don't live near as long. And then I look at how much pain they're in. Are they taking, is it a 9 on the scale, a 10, or is it a 2? If it's a 2, they're in a lot better shape. But if they're in lots and lots of pain and they're doing everything they can, I figure it's going to come in earlier, okay? So there's so many things to look at. You want to know what cancer drugs are on. Are they on chemo? Are they on radiation? Are they on the pill? You know, what are they on? And we look at all that, we study it, then we make a determination.
So when somebody you know, presents you with a report, is there a question on there that says how much pain are you in, a scale from 1 to 10? Or are you looking at, like, the kinds of pain medicine that they're on? Or in some
cases,
not. We're
looking at the pain medicine. Yes, okay. We're looking at what they're actually taking.
So you're actually...
How many cancer drugs are they on?
You're looking at the number. You're looking at the data behind the numbers. What do the numbers mean? Not just, you know, on a chart. You know, if this is 1 through 5, it's this. If it's 6 through 10, it's this. You're looking at, you know, what do these numbers actually mean? You're going through and you're actually dissecting and understanding the data.
That's exactly right. We have to know, you know, what we think about everything they're taking and whatever they're doing. If they're playing golf every day, forget it. We're not doing that deal.
Yeah. Yeah, that means they're out having a good time.
But the ones I read are usually, they've been in and out of the emergency room, they've been in and out of the hospital, things are not going well, and then maybe the wife has something to say. And we've had several men that were, you know, in very bad shape, and the wife is writing all these notes in there for the doctor.
Ooh.
You know, and we have to read those.
So you're taking a very in-depth look at these reports. And so I know that, you know, people who have been with you for a while and have been investing for years and years, I guess they would pretty much just take your word for it. But I know people who are new to something like this, they probably don't have that level of reassurance yet. They probably want to see for themselves. So when somebody comes in to see you for the first time, what are maybe one or two questions that are most commonly asked for a new investor that comes in?
Well, they always want to know how long the policies are. Are they real long? Are they short? You know, mid mid-range? How long does it take each time to put the money in your account? And that, you know, that's always the same answer. So, and they have to read the health. We want them to read the health information and feel like I do about that policy. You know, it's going to come due, and that's the one they need to get on.
And so when people look at these, they have access to all these reports, so they can see it for themselves. And we used to call this page 14. However, they moved it in the packet to like five pages from the end, and we haven't really actually found a clever name for it yet. But
but we're coming up with it.
We're still working on it.
We're working on that.
Five pages from the end just didn't sound cool. It didn't have that little ring. So,
but people doesn't.
They can look at these reports and they can see for themselves, and they don't have to speak doctor. They don't have to have gone to medical school or anything like that. They don't have to have special training. It's all in black and white. So people know exactly what they're investing in before they invest. Do people find that helpful? Or after a while, do they just not even bother looking at it anymore?
Well, lots of times people will say, I have forgot about this or that in my contract. And I refer them back to page 14. If it's a year or two ago, it's on page 14. If it's not, I tell them where to look. Uh-huh. And that reminds them of what their policy will and will not do.
So really, in essence, people know what they're getting. They know what happens, you know, if the policy goes over. They know how much they're going to make. They know roughly, you know, when they're going to get paid, when the policy is expected to mature. And things can come in early. Things can come in late. Things can come in right on time. Either way, people have a general idea of when the policy is going to mature. So once it does mature, how long does it take to actually get paid?
Usually it's 6 to 8 weeks. Now, if it's out of the country, it takes a little longer. You know, in all these years, we've had two that were out of the country. One's in the Philippines, and the other one was in Mexico. And it took a little longer. We had to get a letter from the State Department, you know, that this person had actually passed away in that country.
I would imagine there's probably a little bit more red tape to deal with. I mean, I know you have a system and everything is pretty clear, but I would imagine probably when things happen outside the country, does it take a little bit longer to get these reports?
Yes, it does. It takes a little longer. Now, getting the death certificate has not been real difficult. It's just getting the letter from the State Department has taken a little longer.
Okay. But even still, even with these things that take a little bit longer, we're only talking about, what'd you say, 6 to 8 weeks? Usually.
Yes, it takes 6 to 8 weeks.
So I mean,
that's not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad at all. It's a pretty main streamlined process. Everything is mapped out ahead of time. And the thing that I think is really brilliant about this whole thing is that when a policy does mature, there's not somebody in a back room someplace scrambling, you know, going through spreadsheets trying to figure out, you know, how much each investor gets and where does it go and what's their bank account number to deposit the money in and who is this person. All that is laid out ahead of time. So when the policy matures, there's a number of steps that happen, boom, 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 in order. Everything's mapped out. And so that helps make the process of getting paid a little bit quicker, right?
That's right, because they have a spreadsheet. The bank knows who's in that policy, how much they've got coming. Then when the bank gets the check from the insurance carrier, they just divide it out, put everybody's money where it goes.
So essentially, people just, they invest and they have to sit and wait for the policy to mature. And that's literally all it takes. And would you say that the waiting is probably the hardest part of the whole thing?
Probably so, because people, if they haven't invested before, they get a little anxious. Mm-hmm. You know, how are we doing? They ought to know that we can't change it. I mean, we can't speed it up or anything like that. We just have to wait till we get the word from our people that they have passed away.
So for a new investor, how many policies does it take to actually, because I know, you know, what we see on Wall Street, people are up in the middle of the night checking their portfolio. Do they have anything left? They want to see where they stand. How long does it take policy-wise, you know, first, second, third, fifth, whatever? How long does it take for people to kind of get used to just sitting back and waiting?
After that first maturity, after they've had one mature, they relax and then they do it, just let it work.
Okay. And so we mentioned real quick about what happens if the policy comes in early. People still get paid the same amount. It doesn't get cut if the policy matures early. They still get the same thing. They just get it earlier. So one of the risks, and you always say that this is the biggest risk, is that if it goes over, people have to pay the premiums. And so that's the first of the three risks, right?
That is the greatest risk, is if it goes over, you have to wait till it matures. You don't get paid quite as quick.
Which means that people have to, in turn, pay those premiums, and that's what you were talking about earlier, that you try to escrow for what may come up as far as premiums, so that you don't have to call somebody up and say, hey, you need to pay $50 in premiums, or whatever it is. It's all accrued.
That's exactly right. So, as I said, that's the biggest risk. It may be $500, might be $1,000, whatever it is. We let you know the premiums run out and that you have to pay. And it may go on a year, and it may go on 6 months. And we had some that come due the other day, and it was a little over a year late.
Hmm.
About a year and 1 month, I believe.
Well, that's not bad.
No, it wasn't bad.
Okay, so the policy could go over. That's risk number one. What about number two?
The other risk is it's not liquid during that time. So if you need money, you've got to take it out of one of your other accounts. And that's what most people would do anyway, because they're all accredited. So it is not liquid till it comes due, and then if it's an IRA, you wouldn't want to take it out of this account anyway, because you'd have to pay tax on it. But if it's a regular account and you need some money, you can always take it out, when it matures.
Okay. So people still have access to money. It's just not this particular account
until
right. It matures.
That's right, because it is not liquid till it does mature.
Okay. And what about the third risk?
The third risk is if a life insurance company ever went under. And I've said it many times. The premium income is so tremendous on these insurance companies, somebody always would buy it. Anybody in the market would buy it.
Okay. Yeah, there's too much money.
So that's a small risk. Yeah, it's just too much money.
Well, yeah, I mean, not only does this risk seem kind of small, but, Faye, I got to tell you, in the grand scheme of things, with all the other investment opportunities that exist, it seems like these three risks are relatively small compared to others. It almost seems like there is some kind of a safety net in place for each risk that could happen.
Well, I think there is. The safety net is it's a life insurance company. That's what I love about this, is it's a huge life insurance company that's carrying the paper. And I feel very safe knowing that life insurance company is where we're going to get paid from.
Okay. And so were you saying at one time that life insurance companies are bigger than banks?
A lot of them are, yes, absolutely. If you put them side by side, there's a lot of insurance companies that are a lot bigger than banks, and they have more reserves. They have more cash on hand because the law is different for a life insurance company. They have to have millions in escrow, and they cannot play with that money.
Okay, so it is always in place no matter what, and that's federal stuff. They can't change that.
That's right. You cannot move that money at all. It's not even yours. You think it is if you own a life insurance company, but it's not.
Hmm.
You have no say about what they say you have to do with it.
Okay. So let's run some numbers real quick. I'm going to run a general hypothetical scenario. Say we take a $100,000 investment. Say we have a 24% profit margin, which means that doctors, and you agree, that a so-and-so policy should mature in about 24 months. 1% a month, that means about a $24,000 profit on that particular investment. Now,
what would you say would be
an average, and I know it changes. I know they can go from very, very small to a little bit larger, but what would you say would be an average, if a policy were to go over, what would be an average premium amount that somebody might have to pay?
If it went over, I'd say probably $1,000.
Okay. So we take our $24,000 profit here in this hypothetical example. We take out $1,000 for premiums that you may have to pay. You're still left with $23,000 for literally doing nothing except waiting. Is that right?
That's right. Yes, that's right.
So Why would it, what you've laid out in the last 30 minutes is, it sounds like a win-win situation. I'm sure that people are sitting here going, you know, okay, yeah, I'm running some rough numbers in my brain. This all makes perfectly good sense. Profits are good. The value is good. The risks are even good. You know, you look at those compared to other things. Yeah, I'd say we could call the risks even good because they're less detrimental than other options. So I'm sure somebody's waiting for the other shoe to drop. What's the downside of investing in a life settlement?
Just if it goes over and you have to wait, the waiting period, if you had two or three over, you're going to get a little anxious and say, oh my gosh, I've got some over. But then when they start kicking in again, you're going, oh, this is great, everything's fine.
Okay.
So it's just that momentary lapse that you feel, you know, like, oh, I've got three that have gone over, and that's possible.
All right. So of all the things that we've covered, we've actually already covered what if the other, you know, what's the other shoe that drops? It's if it does go over, people may get anxious, but they don't need to because we see that it doesn't cut into profits hardly. The difference in some cases is hardly noticeable. It's just really their nerves.
That's right. That's really about all it is.
Wow. Wow. All right.
And they know they'll get paid. It's just they're going to get paid later.
Okay. And you were talking about just a second ago about how, you know, maybe three may go over and then some others may come in early. Some may come in on time. The way this works is we're going to kind of zoom out a little bit and take a look at the long term, bigger picture about, you know, how a life settlement actually can get somebody ready to go for retirement. We're going to apply it to everyday life here in just a few minutes. However, in the meantime, this is Your Money with Faye Bagby, and your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
Now, every Saturday morning around this time, we get into trivia, and there's all kinds of interesting things that we talk about from week to week. Sometimes it's Texas history. Sometimes it's some place to visit. Sometimes it's a place to put on your bucket list. So what's our topic this morning?
Okay. Where is the pecan capital of the world?
Well, I'm going to say somewhere in Texas, but I can't narrow it down.
It's got to be Texas. San Saba, Texas.
Ah!
Yes. San Saba was started way back in 1854.
Oh, good Lord.
It's located on the San Saba River. And they have probably 3,000 or 4,000 people there.
Oh, my goodness.
It's not a big place. But what is so amazing there that made it the pecan capital of the world, it's where all of your big orchards are and where years ago it started in Texas. And it's just amazing to me. But this pecan orchard that I'm talking about that is so famous is at the junction of the San Saba River and the Colorado River. Most famous pecan tree is called the Mother Pecan. And it's 200 years old.
Really?
200 years old. And they celebrate all this. They have thin-shell pecans every fall. They have cracked, halved, spiced, roasted. They coat it with chocolate. They chop them in coffee, syrup, preserves. They make candy with them that they ship. And, of course, the townspeople, they all have pecan trees in their backyard. There is 200 employees of the San Saba Pecan Company.
Really? That's it? 200?
200. They're the largest private employer, and they're, of course, the nation's largest processor of pecans.
That's amazing that they can do all that work with 200 people.
Well, everything's automated nowadays.
Oh, that's true.
Now, old Buddy Adams there, he started in the pecan shelling business with 300,000 pounds in 1972. And that's a lot, 300,000 pounds.
That is a lot.
He does 28 million pounds a year now.
Ooh, wow.
28 million with
Good
an M.
Lord.
Yeah. And that's just, it's unbelievable. Blows my mind.
Well, it's not like pecans are you know, heavy products either. It's to come up with that much volume, you got to have a lot of pecans.
Yes, and pecans grew wild there years ago, and that's how all this started. They grew along their rivers, their creeks, and then people said, let's cultivate this. Let's make this a marketable crop. And there was this man, Mr. Milliken, and his great-great-grandfather, Edmund Rison. He was an English cabinet maker. He stopped in San Saba in 1874. He was going to California. And he ended up planting seeds. And he'd run out of money. And he said, well, I'll just build caskets. and he said, no, I think I'll start looking at all these pecan trees. Wow. And he offered a $5 prize for the tastiest thin-shell pecan and discovered the mother pecan tree.
Wow.
Yes. And he bought all the land around the prize tree. And every limb had been lopped off except one. And it was standing. And that's how they started all these pecans with this tree that everything was lopped off but one branch.
So,
And he was an amateur horticulturist, and he worked for decades developing all these different kinds of pecans.
Yeah, and it's fascinating to me that they started with one tree with one fruitful branch, and that was it.
That's all. They just had one old branch. And he shipped pecan seedlings worldwide from his pecan nursery. Can you imagine? Seedlings worldwide.
I can't even believe that. It started from nothing and turned into this massive thing.
Yes, and it shows the Texas way, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Now, on their farm, they have 9,500 trees.
Wow, 9,000?
9,500!
How in the world did they get that? Oh, I guess they planted seeds. But still, that's a lot of trees.
It's a big farm, too. And they started out with 300 in the original orchard that he planted. He planted 300 originally from the mother pecan. And it, once again, it's limbless because lightning has struck it again.
Ah.
Now, there's so many pecan trees in everybody's yard in town. And there's all different varieties, and he was very generous in giving all these away. And the county has 20 commercial growers there.
Really?
And these people all started out with just a hope and a prayer. This one guy said he had a thrashing pole and two buckets. And they started out with a little meager beginning in 1970. He said, I'd thrash the nuts from the tree and Mom would pick them up.
Oh, wow.
And Oliver Pecan Tree is now one of the largest growers, and he has 30,000 trees.
What, 30,000?
He has 30,000.
Oh, my God. I don't even know how that's possible.
Yeah. And in October, November, when they start splitting open, he gets his mechanical harvesters in, and they vibrate the trees to shake loose the nuts.
Wow.
Then he has another machine that sweeps them up and removes the twigs.
Really?
He has 30 employees is all he's got.
Oh, my.
Can you imagine?
I couldn't imagine getting that much volume done by 30 people.
And he says it gets in your blood. And apparently in San Saba, it's in the blood of everybody there because that's how they make this tremendous living.
Apparently so. And you say everybody has trees in their yard.
Everybody has trees in their yard. And all from started out with wild pecans, which I don't even remember wild pecans. Do you?
No. In fact, I'm sitting here trying to think. I don't even know that I knew that there were different kinds. I thought a pecan was a pecan. I didn't realize.
No, there's all kinds.
Wow.
And they were all started by this guy.
Huh.
In the 1800s, 1874.
That's amazing to me.
He was on his way to California to do big things. He didn't know what, but he was on his way and stopped in San Saba.
And
I guess he needed money, so I'll just build caskets. And then he got to seeing the mother tree and all this other, and he said, you know, I think I'm going to grow some pecans.
So he gave up on the original dream of going to California, stopped in Texas, had a new dream of making caskets, which is so bizarre, and then somehow went from casket making to pecan growing and all of a sudden had a new dream.
a big dream. And I think he probably, now it doesn't tell, but I believe he sat under that big tree and thought this up. You know, the mother tree, that big old huge pecan down there on the river, I think he was sitting under it probably part of the time, and he said, "My Lord, it's right here if I just look up."
Wow.
You know, look at these branches and look at these seedlings I can do off this one old tree that's in bad shape, but it's huge, and it's right here on the river. And here's the pecans, and I'll make some seedlings off of this, and I think I can make it work. He was generous. He sent them all over the United States, sent them everywhere.
You know,
and he wasn't a stingy man. Like, "I've got this, I'll hoard it, I'll keep it just for myself."
Yeah, yeah. He could have very easily just kept it all and said, "I'll just make all these profits." But instead, he shared his gifts.
He did share his gifts with millions of people and all of his neighbors. All these people there have got pecan trees.
You know? It's fascinating, really, how the whole process works. It's very inspiring that, you know, if one dream dies, you know, it may be to open up the door. They say if one door closes, another one opens. And I guess in this guy's case, it actually, I mean, we see it right in front of us. You know, his dream of going to California and do whatever big things he was going to do, that dream kind of died. I'm sure he was probably bummed out. I can imagine him saying, "Oh boy, I'll just settle here and make caskets." And then all of a sudden, just literally by looking up, he was hit on the head with this new dream that probably was bigger than his original. It's just fascinating and inspiring about how all that works.
Well, and think about it this way. I bet you there wasn't that many people dying in San Saba. So he wasn't doing enough casket business, okay?
what did you say? It was like a $3,000 or a 3,000 population?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's probably 1,000 people or less. So, you know, they weren't dying very quick, so he wasn't going to ever make any money. You know,
no.
It was going to take a long time to build a casket and get somebody that wanted it.
Yeah.
But when he saw those pecans, and I believe to this day, he was laying under that tree all the time, catnapping, and got these ideas.
Wow. That's
it was a big shade tree, as you know. So he was laying down there on the river thinking about all this, and it came to him. My gosh, it doesn't cost anything. This is free.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then,
you know, to start with these, to start literally with nothing, and then to create seedlings, and then those trees have to have the time to grow so that they can produce healthy pecans. And so, I mean, that takes time, too, to literally start from nothing, to grow into this massive operation. It's awe-inspiring.
Yes, and to think that they make everything in the world and ship it out of San Saba. They make candy out of it. They everything is every kind of pecan in the world, and they dip it in everything. They dip it in coffee. They dip it in chocolate.
Mm.
They dip it in preserves.
Mm.
Can you imagine?
I can only.
People are smart.
Yes.
Once they got started, they said, "What all can we do with a pecan?"
Wow.
And I bet they have the best pecan pies in the world there.
Oh, do you like pecan pie, I'm sure?
I love pecan pie.
Yeah.
Wow, I do. I don't like the store-bought ones because they leave the pecans just on the top.
Yeah.
Or they put those little tiny crumbs on top. You know, I want a real pecan pie.
Yeah, with like big pecans, with meaty, hearty pecans in there.
That's right. I want it all the way through, folks.
So have you ever been to San Saba?
I haven't, but I may have to go now.
I think I'm going to have to go. I always liked sugared up pecans, you know, roasted in the oven. Those are always delicious.
Oh, yes, those are great. And remember, you know, it's not a long way down there.
That's true.
Down by Ballinger.
Uh-huh.
So that's not far.
That's a quick weekend trip right there.
That's a quick weekend trip, and you need to do it October, November.
Is that harvest
October,
season?
Yeah, that's when the harvest is. When it starts to get cold, that's when these pecans are ready.
Ooh.
Yes, they're like a Thanksgiving, Christmas type thing.
Ooh.
You can go down there and get a huge sack of pecans for Christmas, New Year's, and you can freeze them.
Really? You can freeze pecans?
Yes, I do it all the time.
Oh, golly, I didn't know that.
That's how you keep them from getting old. You freeze them.
Huh.
Then you don't ever have an old pecan.
I literally thought, my God, we better eat these before they
I just see trying to eat 20 pounds of pecans.
I've tried.
My gosh. You would try. I know you would. You'd do your best.
I just didn't want to waste them. I had no idea you could freeze pecans.
Yes, you can.
Wow.
I do it all the time.
All right.
Well, and it will keep them fresh.
It sounds like a trip to San Saban is on the bucket list for this fall.
I think it ought to be on the bucket list.
All right.
If you don't go anywhere else, go there
and
bring back pecans.
If you like pecans, you'll be in pecan heaven.
Oh, my gosh, yes. And there's enough to go around.
Of course. With that many trees down there, it would probably take in all your senses right there.
And look, it created a way for one small town to make a living. I mean, town-wise, everybody is involved somehow in that production.
You know, I probably wouldn't roll into town, and if they offer you some pecans, I would not say something like, yeah, I'm not really a nut person. Probably not the right thing to say.
I don't believe I'd say that. You'd be run out of town.
Yeah, you would be run out of town.
You would be.
This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
Now, I promised that we would get into how these life settlements, the big picture, this is a part of a strategy. This is part of a long-term thing. And so I know we've been hyper-focused on individual policies up until now. But the way that this works is that people invest in a policy, and then they get paid on it. And then they roll that over into another policy. And so how many policies at one particular time does your average investor, how many policies are they in? At any given moment?
I would say everybody's probably got 8 to 10.
Okay.
And then I've got some that have got 25.
Oh, wow.
My big investors have got over 20. I was talking to one of them the other day, and he said, Faye, do you know how many policies I've got? And I said, no. He said, I've got over 20 policies. So I've got some big investors that do have like 20 policies.
So how does it work as far as, you know, whether it's 20 or it's, you know, 8, say? How does the process work as far as, you know, all in on these policies and then they all pay out? Or how does the dynamic work?
Well, they pay out one at a time. And as they do, then we roll it over and put it in another policy. Especially if it's an IRA, we need to keep rolling that because that's all tax deferred. And so you're making more money for right now if it's tax deferred. You're not paying taxes on that money. We never talk about that. But you're not paying taxes till years down the road, so you can accumulate more wealth if you don't have to pay taxes.
Now, that is important, and we don't talk about that very often.
No, we never do.
This is the difference between investing and smart investing, is to keep rolling over, keep things moving. Don't take it out. Don't pay those taxes until, 70 and a half.
You have to start taking it out, and you have to start paying taxes. So that saves you a lot of money in taxes for a number of years where you can accumulate more wealth. So that's worth doing. And then we've got a regular account. This is a husband and wife thing. And those you do have to pay taxes, but it's capital gains. So it is smaller than what you would regularly pay. You're not paying as much as you would. You're not paying that 30 or 38%. So that's still a good thing. And as I said, we usually keep rolling this because people need, they're 50 years old, 60 years old. They've got a ways to go. So they need as much retirement money as they can possibly get.
Yeah, and saving
so that's why we work on it.
Saving on those tax dollars, that's a huge deal. I don't know, except for Warren Buffett, I don't know of anybody who has ever said, I really want to pay more taxes.
Well, what he's saying is, I want to give another $1 billion away. And he's arranging it, you know, to give to that foundation that the Gates own, Bill and Melinda Gates. They're all putting their billions in that one foundation to give away money.
Really?
Yes. They've been doing it for years. They started doing this together, I think, 4 years ago.
Huh.
And Bill Gates' father runs that foundation.
Well, I had heard that Warren Buffett has said for a number of years that, you know, because of, you know, his status and, you know, because of loopholes, because of tax breaks, he's not required to pay the same amount of taxes as some people, you know, maybe think that they should. So he's said that what he would do is, instead of paying, you know, what he would pay in taxes to the government, he's going to donate to charities. But I had no idea that he was actually heavily involved with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
He is. And he's already put several billion dollars in. And he's not leaving all this money to his kids. He said they can do the best they can. He got them a good education. They can make a living on their own. Exactly what he said.
That's cool. Do you know that Warren Buffett still lives in the original house he bought in the 70s?
Yes, I've seen a picture of it there in Nebraska.
Yeah, it's that little White House.
Yes, I have. And, you know, his first wife died about 3 or 4 years ago, and he married his assistant. And I don't know how that's working out. You never hear about her.
That's true.
But, you know, as tight as he is, even though he has a jet and has all this, you know, they say he lives very simply.
Yeah, they say he's very modest and very generous with his wealth. And that's pretty cool. It's inspiring.
That is. And, he's you know, he owns that huge furniture store, you know, there. That's there, and now it's come to Dallas even.
Really?
Oh, yeah. He started that furniture store years ago. It's a huge thing. Nebraska Furniture Mart. That's a Warren Buffett deal. Hometown there in Nebraska.
And does he still have Berkshire Hathaway?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Heavens, yes.
All right. So he didn't give that up for furniture.
No, no, no. And I guess he couldn't get furniture he wanted for his home or something. Anyway, he started this years ago, and it's just morphed into a huge thing.
So he'll make his own chairs.
That's right. And, yeah, one of his trusted employees has run it all these years.
Wow. Well, that's amazing. So as far as investing in a life insurance policy, we were talking about how this takes a couple of years. It takes a number of investments. And it doesn't matter if you're in 8 policies or if you're in, you know, 25. It doesn't matter. The point is that whichever route you take, it's going to be a several-year plan. This is not something where you invest overnight and then next week, you know, you got like $1 billion and you retire. That's not even the point. That's, you don't want to do that kind of thing. So how many years should somebody expect to be in an average amount of policies to get to an average place where they need to retire? And I know there's so many averages and just, you know, hypothetical numbers thrown in here, but just to give people a starting general ballpark idea, how long should they try to do this to get ready?
I would think 7 or 8 years. You need about 7 years.
Okay.
And then if you don't have that much time for the retirement, go ahead and retire, and we just keep going. You know, and we may keep going the rest of your life, or you may get too old to do it. You know?
Yeah, and that's that's a good point. When people get to retirement and they have enough to retire, most of them, and correct me if I'm wrong, but most of them keep retiring even after, or keep investing even after their day-to-day day job paycheck goes away.
Oh, yeah, because you're going to need money all the time. You know, it's not like when you retire you suddenly don't need any money. You do. You don't want to get into your principal, and that's why that we try to keep the interest as high as we can where people can live off of their interest.
So how does that work? How do you generally set something like that up? Say somebody retires, they're going to need, you know, access to money. How do they? How do you set it up so they have enough to have access to pay bills or travel or, you know, eat or whatever they want to do on a day-to-day basis, but still have enough to invest in more policies and make more money? How's that work?
Okay, we try to put enough cash for 2 years of income in the account when they retire. So if they say, Faye, we need $100,000 a year, we're going to put $200,000 cash, then invest the rest. And then every time we have extra interest, we'll put it back into that account for them. And if they don't need any cash then, we'll just reinvest it. So it'll depend how much they're taking out of that account to live on. If they're taking $100,000, then we've got to keep $200,000 in there for 2 years at a time. So that's what we try to do. We've got several people right now that we try to keep $200,000, and they've had so many maturities, they've got $400,000 in cash right now.
Oh, wow. And they have access to that at any given time?
At any given day.
Okay, because I think one thing that may get confusing to some people is that, you know, we mentioned when you're in a life settlement that you it's not liquid, so you don't have access to it until the policy matures. That does not mean that they don't have access to any of their money. That's a whole separate account. We're just talking just the investment as far as the liquid.
That's
aspect.
Right, but all their cash is always available to them.
Yeah,
and it takes 2 days to get cash. It's quicker than a brokerage account.
Wow.
Because they usually take 5 to 7 days. We don't. We can overnight it, and you'll have it on the second day.
Okay. So it's important for people to know that they have access to their money at any time. After all, this is called your money, and they can get to it.
That's right. Always.
Okay. All right. Well, it sounds like a brilliant plan. So to do a life settlement, somebody has to be accredited. So this is not an investment for just anybody and everybody. You do have to meet some guidelines in order to do this. So what does it mean to be accredited?
To be accredited, you must make $200,000 a year, or you need to be worth $1 million without your home.
Ooh.
Now, you can have your cattle, your ranch, you can have your land, you can have houses, rental houses, you can have a 401k, an IRA, your savings, add it up, everything but the home you live in. If you have a lake house, that's fine. If you have a summer home, that's fine. Put that in. If you have a lot of oil wells, you can certainly count those. And we never do put the oil wells in. I've got a lot of people who've got big farms, but we never say, okay, add your oil wells in. That really makes your wealth go right up the tree.
Oh, yeah, that'll make a big difference in a hurry.
It'll make a big difference in a hurry. I have clients that have got 15 to 20 oil wells.
Oh, wow, my goodness.
If you add up what those things are worth, you know, a 10-year plan, they're worth a lot of money.
Wow. Okay, so for people who are kind of running some rough numbers, maybe they're driving around right now, they're kind of running some numbers in their head, they're thinking, okay, I might be close. Do you find that people that are close sometimes forget about maybe an old 401k at an old job that they're not at anymore? They forget about those, and once you add those in, it's enough to tip them over. Do you find that to be the case at all?
Absolutely. Everybody forgets about the 401ks because it's been in the other company for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I mentioned it to them, and they bring those over to us. But I've had people who've had two from former jobs and just forgot about them for over 20 years.
Oh, I'm sure that adds up in a hurry, too.
It does. So it's an unexpected bonus that they're going to get.
Okay. So, and then real quick, for those who are running the numbers and they're saying, I'm not quite to that point where I'm accredited, I think I just need to give up on investing, just never retire. That's not the case either, because you have other options to build people's wealth, to get them to retirement. So what are some of those
options?
Well,
the other option I would suggest is an annuity. You know, annuities have been around 150 years. They're safe. They're guaranteed by the assets of the life insurance company. Like the one I like to use is worth $58 billion. They've been in business 100 years.
Wow.
So I know we can trust them, and that's the kind of life insurance companies I like. Also, at the end of the third year, if you need to take your money out, you can take the whole thing out. You can't take all the interest, but you can take all of your principal out if you had an emergency. And I don't know of anybody else that will let you do that.
So there are a number of options.
Oh, yeah. It's got some really good options. At the end of 10 years, it's a walk away. You can walk away and take it, or at the end of the first year, you can say, I need to start taking money out, and you can do that. You can take an income stream that'll last you the rest of your life.
Wow.
So it's got lots of options, and they're all great.
So people basically just need to get a kind of a general idea of where they're at, come talk to you, and you'll work with what they've got. You can get them to where they need to be, find out, you know, how long till they want to retire, how much are they going to need, where are you at right now. You'll work all that into the formula to put them in the right plan to get them to retirement, and then even more importantly, beyond retirement. But the thing is they've got to call you, and so you have some availability.
They can't procrastinate. All my procrastinators need to come in.
We hear about it all the time. You say men procrastinate like nobody's business.
They do. A man will procrastinate for months. And then, and you know, this guy that was in this week, we had talked to him 2 or 3 months ago. And he just got busy. He couldn't come till this week. I was laughing. I go, oh, my gosh.
Well, at least he came and got the ball rolling.
He did. He came and signed up. So, you know, it just takes men a while. They're not very fast.
I know the feeling. All right. So, Faye, one last time for people to come make an appointment to come see you. What is your phone number?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330.
You've been listening to Your Money with Faye Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Listen for Your Money with Faye Bagby every Saturday morning at 10 here on 97 Gold.
This program has been a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and has been brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.